all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Bob Gould.
And good evening out there, America. All of you listening here to Veterans Radio's Bob Gould and another live presentation of Veterans Radio coming to you from the studios right here in beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan. Wham Talk 1600, by the way, you know, those of you that are in Michigan, maybe having a little trouble picking those up, go to our website, www.veteransradio.net. Be sure it's veteransradio.net. Click on Listen Live, and you're going to be right here with us. So we have one heck of a program today, folks. We're going to be talking with Michael Golombeski, author of Level Zero Heroes, and we have a scoop today. That's right, scoopity scoop scoop. We are scooping the world. He will be releasing this book, Level Zero Heroes, on September the 2nd, and we have him live. Yeah, right here on Veterans Radio. That just shows you the level of the guests that we have all the time right here on Veterans Radio. So we are scooping the world. He'll be heading out to New York tomorrow, but not today. He's going to be on the program. And in the studio with me is, of course, my partner, Dale Throneberry. He waves, yes, giving me the five hand there. There we go. And our board op and producer at Wham, Derek. Derek. Okay. All right. There he goes. He gives the high sign. Folks, here we go. The news and events. The 12th annual Pig Roast public welcome at the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310. Next Saturday, that's right, next Saturday, you want to get over to the Pig Roast for the Vietnam Veterans of America. That's over on Wagner. I know that's in Ann Arbor. Some guy in Ohio is going to say, what do I care about that? Well, however, you might, who knows, might find yourself in Ann Arbor. So it's going to be next Saturday, the Pig Roast. Boy, that's that is so good. Man, succulent roast pig. Oh, and they get that skin a nice golden brown. It's really a lot of fun. It's on Wagner Road in Ann Arbor, Chapter 310, the Vietnam Veterans of America. The kids 6 and under are free. It's $10 if you're an adult. It's $5 if you're a kid. And if you don't have the money, don't worry. Come anyway. We'll let you have the whole darn thing. It's not a problem. So if you want to have yourself a delicious meal, you want to get to the Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 310, 12th Annual Pig Roast. Gary Lilly really liked working on that, too, to our partner. Yep, he loved it. On Wagner Road in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Now, next week, Dale's going to have – Dale's our Vietnam – our Vietnam host, and he's going to be talking about the Vietnam Veterans for Factual History. Now, is that a misnomer or what? I don't know. Factual history, all kinds of stuff been going down. But C-SPAN 3, they're going to air the August 5th, that was passed, National Press Club debate, and they're going to air that on September 1. Ooh, that's going to be tomorrow on C-SPAN 3, and I don't see a time on here, okay? But I'm sure if you go to your guide, if you got AT&T, Comcast, Verizon, or whatever you have, go to C-SPAN 3 for the Vietnam Veterans for Factual History, the National Press Club debate. Now, if you happen to miss all of that, guess what? You can come on our program, that's right, next week, because my partner Dale, and he is looking right now, there he is, yes, Dale will be having as his guest all about this particular debate. Right, he's shaking his head. So, once again, C-SPAN 3 tomorrow is going to be airing the National Press Club debate from the Vietnam Veterans for Factual History. Well, as we always mention here on Veterans Radio, if you have something that you'd like us to promote, your event, it's a pig roast, a, you want to do packages for the troops, whatever, please let us know. Let us know. Go to our website, www.veteransradio.net. Be sure it's .net. That's right, .net. And you'll be in the know because you can let us know, and we'll be glad to announce your event. Oh, and where do we broadcast? Man, we broadcast not just on Wham! Radio Talk 1600 AM, but we also talk to the world. That's right. So we can reach wherever that you want your message to reach. There we go. And one of my favorite topics I like to talk about, because you never get enough information. And what we hear more and more, and I hear it over at the VA hospital, or I hear it in talking with veterans, man, I don't know what benefits I get. What am I going to do? Well, here's what you're going to do. You're going to come to the fifth annual Veterans Summit in Livonia, Michigan. But before we get into that, I have with me, and my guest right now, and he's looking at me with a big smile, that big Irish smile. Ah, there he is. Jerry Grady, the chairman of the board of the Canton Community Foundation. Chairman of the board. He is going to be there at the particular meeting, and it's coming up to some of us. I'm not going to talk any more about this. I'm going to let Jerry tell us. Jerry, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
Now, this is a free event. Is that correct?
Yes, it is a free event.
But you want folks to what?
We want folks to pre-register.
Pre-register. And why is that?
We want them to pre-register so that when the summit happens, that we know how many officers we're going to need, how many administrators from the VA, and then we also need to make sure that we set up for the free lunch they're going to be getting as well during
what?
That day.
They get chow, too?
They get chow, too.
And steak and potatoes?
I'm sure that's probably what somebody picked.
But it's going to be, it's right, the lunch is complimentary, the event is free, but you must register ahead of time. What's that website?
It is www.cantonfoundation.org.
CantonFoundation.org. Remember, we tell all of you folks to always have a pencil, pen, crayon, whatever, ink pen, I mean, the whole thing, because you never know the kind of stuff that we bring here on Veterans Radio. So once again, that's CantonFoundation.org. That is a summit, the Veterans Summit in Livonia, Michigan. It is free, and you do have to register. They also ask that you bring your DD-214. I ain't got a DD-214. I don't know where it is. But there will be people there that will help you. Now, here's just a couple of stories and quotes that that Jerry was nice enough to put together. Last year, a woman called the foundation several days after the summit to express her appreciation for the event, because what she learned at the summit, she was able to access funeral services for her veteran husband. Let me say that again. Access funeral services for her veteran husband. Everybody raise their hand. All those that know all about the funeral services that are your benefit. No, there's not enough hands raised. That's what I thought. Oh, there's a couple right there in the studio. Dale's got both hands up. However, so you go to CantonFoundation.org, and you can come to this event, and you can find out about benefits such as the funeral services for the veteran husband. Jerry, here was another one. A man from Plymouth brought his friend who couldn't have come without him to learn about his pension. Bean, they tell you about pensions, Jerry?
They tell you about pensions. They tell you about all benefits that you have. The pensions were probably one of the biggest things that a lot of veterans were unaware. Yeah, they were very unaware of what was going on and how to even apply for them. And that's what a lot of the lawyers brought to the table for them.
But how do you know? Well, you have lawyers.
There are lawyers there,
yes.
Too.
And 10 help. Years, we're going to have a million lawyers. help us there. But no, I'm sorry. No cards and letters. But so you come to this summit, and you're going to have tables. Now, can somebody have a one-on-one?
Yes, there will be one-on-ones. When you get there, when you first get to the registration desk, you'll be able to ask for a one-on-one with about 10 or 11 different administrators that'll be there. And that's one of the reasons we're asking to have you pre-register, because then we can get you set up in the beginning.
So the pre-register would be go online for CantonFoundation.org, correct?
Correct.
Canton Foundation, and that's where you can pre-register.
Where you pre-register.
And if you do want, how about that, folks? You can have a one-on-one with a benefits person. Let that sink in. So I don't want to hear from anybody, any cards, letters, etc., that, oh, boy, I don't know about my benefits, because this is the place that you can go. Imagine having a one-on-one with a VSO. What's a VSO?
Veteran Service Veteran Service Organizer, I believe.
Organized, yeah, yeah. And those guys and gals, right?
They're all...
Are you going to have one or two or how many?
There's supposed to be 10. We have 10 lined up for right now.
10. And you're taking registration, online registration. What if you didn't register online? Can you show up?
We would prefer you to pre-register.
I would think so. So that's it, folks. That's the deal. You got to pre-register. Go to CantonFoundation.org. CantonFoundation.org. Register for benefits. What other benefits are they going to be talking about?
A lot of things such as what is your VA eligibility? What are you about your VA healthcare eligibility with the current ASA? How does that affect a lot of the healthcare that you would get at the VA? Obviously your pension, but also your disability benefits.
Ah.
A lot of people don't know about their disability benefits either.
And how they can apply for disability benefits and
Correct.
What they can expect. And all that's going to be available. There's going to be – is this an all-day event?
It's 8:45 to 2 p.m.
Oh, and lunch.
And okay. lunch.
And
yeah,
lunch.
And lunch. We throw that in there for you.
And so you're going to walk into this big event. It's in Livonia, Michigan. We would let you know the address and all that, but you got to go online, and you're going to get this packet of information when you register. Is that right?
Yes, yes. You will get some packet of information, and then when you get there, you'll even get more information. And then we also have job interviews available. We do bring in those organizations out there that are looking to hire veterans, and so there will be a job vendor fair there as well.
Wow. So, folks, think about this. Benefits, jobs, food, and good camaraderie. Wow. How often do you have this?
This is our fifth one, and it's every year during September. We do it the same, usually around the September 11th, 12th time frame.
If somebody wanted to find out more about the Affordable Health Care Act and how it applies to a veteran, can they do that too?
Yes, they can. There will be people there to answer those questions for you.
Man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. And about the DD-214, if somebody hasn't found theirs or can't, what about that?
Usually what we've seen is that they'll be directed onto a website on how to apply for it, and then afterwards you come back, call up that officer, and that officer will then be able to assist you.
Oh, boy, that's exhausting to think about this. And you folks have all that planning. We have been running your PSA here on WAM Talk 1600 as well as on Veterans Radio. And we do, definitely do, want to thank you folks. Very quickly, what else do you do throughout the year?
Throughout the year, we put on many different nonprofit organizations will come to us to help them either raise funds or help them get their vision in place. People like the Open Door Ministry, was looking on how do we get something set up to be able to help the people who need food. And so we work with them on establishing their nonprofit, getting them set up to do that. We also do a lot of scholarships. There's a lot of scholarships that are done during the year. We've given away approximately $500,000 over the past 25 years. This is our 25th year anniversary, so we are putting on a pretty good-sized 25th anniversary gala, which we're going to be doing hopefully with the Partnership for the Arts. So we really look at three different areas to help the community in.
Wow. Okay. Everything's going to be available at the Canton Community. It's a tongue twister.
It
Go
is.
Ahead.
It is. It's the CantonFoundation.org.
Canton Foundation. Community Foundation.
Community. Yep.
That's right. And you want to go to the CantonFoundation.org.
Correct.
Jerry, before we close here with this segment, is there anything else that you'd like to add to the veterans?
I would like to say, first off, is to thank you to you for allowing us to come on. And I also would like to say how important it is to the Canton Community Foundation and how blessed we are to be able to put this event on for those that did serve for our country, for our freedom.
And it's not just for Michigan folks. If somebody's picking this up in Ohio,
they're more than willing to show up. We had people
from
Ohio and Indiana last year.
Okay, once again, it's CantonFoundation.org. And Jerry, I want to thank you very much for being our guest on Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much, Bob. I greatly appreciate it.
And please come back again.
We will. Thank you.
Whew. Okay, well, I'm going to be right back with my author, Michael Golombeski, Level Zero Heroes. That's right, right here on Veterans Radio, right after this very important message.
Living at American House is like being on a cruise ship with all the lovely surroundings, the many, many activities, and the people to share with. It's so comfortable to be here. I feel safe. I don't have to shop. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean up.
When you move into an American House senior living community, you open the door to a new world of possibilities. Our life enrichment directors are committed to enhancing the lives of residents every day. We look forward to finding out what interests you.
I just get dressed up and walk down to the dining room and enjoy my meals in the company of other people at my table.
For more moments made in American House, go to AmericanHouse.com. Again, that's AmericanHouse.com. Or watch us at YouTube.com/AmericanHouseLiving.
Living here has enriched my life. I'm Carol Huck, and I'm made in American House.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. Every now and then we get an opportunity to scoop, that's right, scoop a story, and we've got a big scoop right now because this book's going to be released on September 2nd. It's called Level Zero Heroes. It's St. Martin's Press. Michael Golombeski and John R. Bruning are the authors, and I want to welcome to Veterans Radio, big Veterans Radio, welcome to Colorado. We're calling Colorado right now, and Michael Golombeski. Michael, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, Bob, hello. Thank you for having me on. I hope you're having a good day.
Hey, we're having a great day. This is live, of course, as you know. And how are things out there in Colorado?
It is going great right now. It's a beautiful day. I'm up in my office, and the girls are out running errands, so there's nobody in the house. I got the window open. There's a really nice breeze coming in, and I just poured a big cup of coffee, and I put a little bit of whiskey in it. So, I mean, this is perfect.
Yes, sir. Don't they call that Irish coffee, I think?
They do.
Something like that. But, yes. Well, anyway, Sergeant Michael Golombeski, Staff Sergeant Michael Golombeski, spent 8 years with the U.S. Marine Corps as a combat veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq. He served as a Joint Terminal Attack Controller. We're going to be talking about that in just a minute. With the Marine Special Operations Team 8222. The title, Level Zero Heroes. The first thing I want to ask, Michael, is how did you come up with that title?
That is an excellent question. For the longest time when I was writing the book, I really didn't have a title for it. I kind of tossed things around in my head, but nothing really stuck until I got to one of the chapters where I was describing the different tiers and levels they have that they assign to missions based on their classification. And a level zero mission is considered a routine patrol. It's just a routine patrol in combat, nothing out of the ordinary. It ranks very low when it comes to getting assets like aviation and helo support. And I got to thinking about the story and a lot of the situations that the team was in. We were just out conducting these level zero, we call them CONOPs, concept of operations, basically just missions. And the majority of the ones we were doing were level zeros, but the environment in the valley we were in was so hostile that as soon as you left the wire, you had a 95% chance that you were going to get in a firefight, regardless of whatever higher command deemed your mission level to be. So that explains the first part. So you got level zero, which means level zero operation, or just a regular foot patrol.
Now, you were coming out, and I want to get this joint TAC, right? Was that what a JTAC?
JTAC.
JTAC, right. Yeah, because that was – whenever I've seen a program on Afghanistan and Iraq, and I see these firefights – and I'm going, where's the cavalry? Where's the air? Where are they? And here, you're the one that's going to answer that because I'm thinking we've got all this firepower. We've got Apaches. We have A-10s. We have B-1. And by the way, folks, B-1 bombers are all part of this. That's right. And we're going to get into that in just a second. I don't want to tell the whole story. All right? No. Yeah, we want you to get the book. Right, Mike?
Absolutely.
Right, yeah, and it's with St. Martin's Press. It's Level Zero Heroes, St. Martin's Press. But it begins that Sergeant Golombeski was going to become a member of the team, and one of the things that they have to do is that when he arrived, you got a bond. How did you do that?
Oh, geez. it was really hard because, you know, before the team actually deploys, you know, there's different people in the teams that have different skill sets. You got snipers, you got guys that do intel, you have guys that have very different jobs. So there's a lot of individual training that's going on, and it's not really towards the end of your pre-deployment workups before you deploy is when the team actually fully comes together, you know, all 22 men. And that's where the book starts. It starts when the team finally all came together in the last 2 months of our workup before we deployed to Afghanistan. And the book opens up in Fallon, Nevada.
Okay.
The team starts training as a team. So we're working on our team level tactics, and we were given the opportunity to go train out in, it's called Dixie Valley. It's this huge valley out by Fallon Naval Air Force Station where they have the Top Gun school at. But it's this very remote area of Nevada, and we were able to just go out with our vehicles, all of our gear, and just the team, and just go out and work on tactics. So at the end of the night, you know, we would set up camp, have a fire going, and that's really where the bonding started. That's where we started to get to know each other, because when you operate in small teams like this, it's not all about your ability to do your job. You have to be able to bind and have cohesion to be able to work in such a small team and have such a tremendous mission to accomplish. Everybody's got to be brothers.
And of course, a little Jameson helped. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell us about that.
Well, you know, we it's actually funny that in the story, we pulled into, if anyone who knows Fallon, Nevada knows, it's an extremely small town. It's almost out in the middle of nowhere. And we pull into this little quickie mart in our gun trucks. So we have our GMVs, which are really souped up Humvees. And we had guns hanging on it, so we had 240s on the scissor mounts on the side. We had a 50 cal in the turret. Everybody has their kits on with their helmets and their weapons. And we basically, you know, ground our weapons and just walk into this quickie mart, fully kitted up.
That must have freaked them out, eh?
We start buying, you know, packets of hot dogs, a couple cases of beer, a couple of bottles of whiskey. Basically just grabbing supplies because we knew that we were going to be out in the middle of nowhere and we were going to have to camp for the night.
Well, with all that, a person could have a good time in Columbus, Ohio, with all that stuff. But and here you are. You're now with this team. How long had the team been assembled prior to you being there?
Oh wow! When I was with MARSOC right there, I joined 2nd Marine Special Operations Battalion in January of 2009. So MARSOC was still in its infancy. And a lot of the guys that were in the company that I was in basically were being rehashed from the company that had just gotten back from Afghanistan because they didn't have enough personnel to fill all the companies. So a lot of guys were just turning and burning on deployments. And basically our team was assembled right up until about 2 months before we deployed. You know, they're still moving personnel around because we were just so short-manded that we were, you know, accepting volunteers who wants to go back to Afghanistan. You know, I know you only been back for 3 months, but, you know, we still have slots that need to be filled. So we didn't get our full complete team until about 2 months before we deployed.
Now, you're coming into this team, and okay, for lack of a better word, you want to be accepted. You want to be a part of it. And what did you think and do personally to expedite that?
The job that I had as an aircraft controller is an extremely meticulous and technical job. It's not something that can be taken lightly because of the amount of firepower that you're employing. It's different when you're a rifleman and the biggest caliber you're shooting is a 40-millimeter grenade. Well, when you're a JTAC, you're in charge of detonating 2,000-pound bombs on pinpoint grids. So it's an extremely technical job, and it's one of those jobs when things go wrong really, really bad. And
they have consequences, of course, that are really bad.
Oh, yes, yes. You know, if you're talking about civilian casualties, that's one thing. But, you know, God forbid, like in the book, we had a blue-on-blue incident with an A-10 that killed and maimed a lot of friendly guys, which is just another aspect of controlling air.
That was very hard for me to read, that section. That was very hard. I felt so frustrated, and I'm sure you felt just as frustrated in doing that. Now, don't forget, folks, now he has to be, Michael, you had to be certified. Is that right?
Yes, yes. All JTACs within Afghanistan or in any operating theater have to be qualified. They have to meet a certain level of training and proficiency and qualification before they can go into country and be labeled, carry the label JTAC and have air control authority and release authority of ordnance.
Okay, so we're going to cut for a I know we have another break. Well, but we're going to get coming back. We'll come back out of this, and then we're going to go right to October 29th, 2009, Herat, Western Afghanistan. We're going to be right back right after. Can we go to a break? No, I can't. I said, okay, we still got another minute. All right. So as far as this bonding, did you feel when you were ready to go that you had bonded with these troops?
You know, I didn't. I really didn't get that sensation until about, I would say, our first firefight once we got into Afghanistan, because, you know, the whole workup thing and getting ready to deploy was just so hectic that, you know, everything's going a million miles an hour. It's not till you actually get – it's like you can't even wait to get in the country, because then everything just slows down and it's just team stuff. You know, you're not doing all this administrative and all this other, you know, whatnots back here in the States before you deploy. So, you know, kind of getting into the war zone is actually kind of a relief.
Okay.
Now you can just focus on your job.
We got to go to a break.
This is the Blaze Radio News. I'm Dave Perkins. The House Intel Committee Chairman says the United States, in terms of foreign policy, is in free fall. Here's the Blaze Radio's Tom Peach.
Michigan Republican and Chair of the House Intelligence Committee, Congressman Mike Rogers, says America's Arab League allies have given the president plenty of opportunity over the past 2 years to come up with a strategy.
They were asking for intelligence and coordination and helping lead the effort of which folks to vet to give weapons and money in Syria, and at least some strategic guidance in the region. The president rejected that. That was his decision. And we watched it progressively get worse.
Rogers on Fox News Sunday. I'm Tom Peace, The Blaze News.
The world is watching ISIS grow and strengthen influence and watching an American president who doesn't even have a policy for dealing with that. And now new information on the plans of ISIS. Here's The Blaze Radio's Chris Vermilion.
Foreign Policy Magazine reporting that it has recovered a Dell laptop owned by a member of ISIS and including instructions on how to weaponize the bubonic plague. Other files on the device turn out to be documents that provide ideological justifications for jihadi organizations. They include videos of Osama bin Laden, manuals on how to make bombs, instructions for stealing cars, as well as lessons on how to use disguises in order to avoid getting arrested while traveling from one spot to another. I'm Chris Vermilion, The Blaze News.
And no new information yet on Joan Rivers. 3 days ago, arriving in cardiac arrest at Mount Sinai Hospital's emergency clinic in New York in a medically induced coma. Since then, her daughter, Melissa, arriving quickly to be by her side. Little information about the procedure she was undergoing or what might have gone wrong, but so far, on life support, Joan Rivers still hanging on and millions hoping for a miracle. I'm Dave Perkins. This is news on the Blaze Radio Network. Truth.
Are you a military veteran? You need help finding out about your benefits? With over 600,000 veterans in Michigan, many don't have the proper information to obtain the benefits they are entitled to. All Michigan veterans are invited to attend the Canton Community Foundation's annual Veterans Summit. Topics will include VA and health care eligibility, pension, and disability benefits. This free event will be held Wednesday, September 10th at Laurel Manor in Livonia, Michigan. Registration is required, so go to CantonFoundation.org. That's CantonFoundation.org.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And we're back right now on Veterans Radio. And I have with me author Michael Golombeski, who wrote the book, and it's soon to be released. That's right. You got a scoop because we have an advanced copy of Level Zero Heroes. Folks, we've got all kinds of things coming up. We've got birthdays. We've got Christmas. So this is a nice, nice little gift that you could give to your veteran. Level Zero Heroes, St. Martin's Press. And you can go to, Michael, why don't you give us that website?
The best website to go to is levelzeroheroes.com. That's where you can get all the info, and it's got all the hyperlinks depending on, you know, where you want to pre-order or buy online, Amazon, Barnes & Nobles. You can get it pretty much anywhere, even if you just go to Google and just put in Level Zero Heroes book, and it'll come up first thing.
And this is the first book that was written about Marine Special Operations. Is that true?
Yes. That's one of the very first or very good details about the book. Is this book is the first one to have been written about Marine Corps Special Operations, which is a new component of U.S. SOCOM, U.S. Special Operations Command. Prior to 2006, the U.S. Marine Corps did not have a component under SOCOM. The Army did with, Army SF and Rangers, Ranger Battalions, obviously Navy SEALs, and then the Air Force has their tactical squadron, their PJs, and their TACP guys that operate with Army SF, but there was no Marine component because the Navy was already giving up that piece.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
And it wasn't until 2006 or a year or so before 2006 that the Department of Defense basically wanted the Marine Corps to come into special operations because the Marines had just proven herself so much during the beginning parts of Iraq and Afghanistan that it was time for the Marines to become part of the special operations community.
And again, folks, it might seem like I'm jumping around, but I got so much to cover here, and I do want to get the highlights. How many tours have you done in the Middle East, Michael?
I've done four.
And how has that impact been on your family?
It's rough.
It is.
I did 8 years, a little over 8 years in the Marine Corps with a total of 5 deployments. So out of 8 years, that's probably about 5 years that you spent away from your family. And I can't say enough about my wife, Sabrina. She held everything together. You know, when you deploy, it's basically your life is put on pause, but everybody that stays back home here, life kind of has to go on without you. And it really takes a good relationship. I've seen so many relationships just fall apart because of the number of deployments and how frequent they are.
Now, I want to say a veteran salute to Sabrina. Right, Dale? Yes, sir. He's shaking his head. Everybody in the control room. So, Sabrina, you're a blessing, and God bless you and Michael for sharing that because we know what a sacrifice that is for the families. Okay, you're on your way. You're in Herat, Western Afghanistan. It's October, just before Halloween, 2009. You have to take a convoy, holy moly, a convoy. Where do you have to take it?
Wow. We are leaving from Herat City, which is in, if you're looking at Afghanistan, it's in the northwest portion of Afghanistan. And the FOB that we got assigned to was Forward Operating Base Todd, which was almost clear on the other side of the they haven't broken into regimental commands, and our area was called RC West. So you've got Herat all the way on the left side, and our FOB was all the way on the right side. So it was about a little over 180 kilometers to travel from Herat City to our FOB, and I think we crossed 3 mountain ranges to get there. The Army said it was only supposed to take 2 days. It ended up taking 5 days, and we lost about half of the supplies we were carrying with us.
Now, that was a very interesting, were the indigenous, were they taking those supplies literally off your vehicles?
The main part of the convoy, we were carrying all of our gear with us. So we had our large Connex boxes that had our gear that we were going to be using while operating out of FOB Todd. The Army was bringing up tanker trucks of fuel because they were trying to do one last drop of fuel for the FOB to get them through the winter. And this convoy was going out basically in during the fall, so this would be the last run that they could make out there. And basically the FOB has to live off airdrops for fuel, food, everything. And when everything was said and done, we ended up blowing up almost all of those fuel trucks.
I know that was
about 15 of them.
That was so frustrating to hear that. And we're not going to go into why. No,
yeah.
You got to buy the book, folks, to find out why. But there is this attrition that's going on, and here they haven't even reached their objective, and we have this attrition of supplies that's going up to the forward operating base, Todd. Everything is happening all at once. But what we're going to talk about right now, we have a few minutes because I'm going to go right to it. It's always been something, rules of engagement, ROE, rules of engagement. You have this international force. You've got the Spanish. You've got the Italians. And tell us about the Spanish and the Italians.
You know,
I don't mean to be disparaging, folks, but what were their ROEs?
Well, the Spanish were overall in charge of all of RC West. So it's the Spanish were in charge of that. Underneath of them came the Italians and the 82nd Airborne. Those were kind of the subordinate units. Now, because we were special operations, we worked under a separate command. We operated under the Special Operations Task Force. So we didn't answer to the Spanish or anyone else besides the Special Operations Command guys. And the ROEs are, you have blanket ROEs that cover everybody in Afghanistan. Those are just blanket ones that are set by the COM ISAF or whoever the top general is in Afghanistan, which is a U.S. general.
And what were they? What were they? Tell my listeners.
I mean,
just that one. Well, I mean, tell them.
Well, basically, you have, you cannot. Oh. It's pretty hard because when you talk about ROEs, it's such a murky thing where somebody tries, they set these guidelines, and it is to the point where they restrict your ability so much to engage where you feel right. You actually, to the point where before you squeeze the trigger, you are thinking to yourself, okay, if I do this, how am I going to explain it? Am I doing it right? Instead of just shooting when you know you should shoot. You're actually playing, you're doing this little tug of war in your head on whether or not I'm in the ROEs or I'm outside the ROEs.
And there were moments, folks, during a firefight, and again, I'm not going to give you details in the book, you got to buy the book. So, but that the Italians were, and the Afghan police, they were just sort of milling around. Is that true?
Oh yeah, you can see the different ROEs in between the different countries because each country has their own homeland ROEs. So with the Italians, would basically sit on their guns, and they could not fire their weapons back unless they were personally being shot at.
That's crazy.
So if I'm on a rifle, and you know my fellow Italian soldier that's 50 feet over to my right, if he's being shot at, I can't shoot in support of him.
That's
because
crazy.
I'm not being shot at.
That's crazy.
And the Spanish, they were in the league all their own. Just to put it politely, the Spaniards were the ones that originally set up FOB Todd. It was called FOB Columbus. When things got heated up there, they basically pulled all their personnel out and gave it to the 82nd Airborne and the Italians to take care of it.
That's crazy. That is absolutely insanity. The insanity of war has come to the ridiculous, to the subliminal, and that is absolutely crazy. And I know how this – well, how did it affect – how do I want to say this? As briefly as you possibly can, how did you get over the frustration level of something like that?
Well, things changed. You know, when we first started out, you know, the first couple firefights, you could see the starch different in between the different fighting styles. You know, the 82nd Airborne guys that were there, they were all solid dudes. They were straight fighters. And the more that we worked with the Italians and the more firefights that we got in, the Italians realized that they are in the middle of nowhere and nobody is coming to help you. We're at least 100 kilometers and two mountain ranges away from the next friendly forces. So if you don't fight, nobody's coming to get you. So the Italians, where we were at, were probably saw the most combat Italians have seen since World War II.
And there's other things to deal with here, folks. And again, we're not here to be political at all. Period. No. But what I want to point out is this level of intensity of awareness that our troops in Afghanistan, I'm sure in Iraq too, had to be on in order to survive. Now there. You also had the regular Afghans, and you had the Afghan police, and they were just all sort of a mishmash. Is that correct?
Absolutely. You have the ANP, which are the police, and then you have the ANA. And the main difference between the two is the police force is actually drawn from the local population. So you have a lot. You have so much corruption involved in it because they're basically like a mafia group. And they're totally intertwined with local politics and whatnot. And then you have the Afghan army, which come from all other different regions. So, you know, the ones that were stationed up in Balamargab where we were, they weren't from that region. They were from all over Afghanistan. And, you know, you get them in a place like that, they honestly don't care. They don't care for those people there. They don't know them. You know, it was actually to the point where they were so ill-equipped and so undermanned that when it came wintertime, they were in no condition to, you know, fight, or they could barely hold the ground that they had. It basically just came down to literally survival through the winter.
Now you, in your book, there was an incident with the 82nd Airborne. We're not going to get into that. No, we're not going to get into that. I'll tell you why. Save it for when you read the book. But it brings all of these issues together, and one of the things that I admired most, Michael, was that how you reconciled all of this and still did your job. What were the things that were going through your mind that allowed you to do that?
Ah, geez, you know, you can rethink a situation a million times, you know, after you've done it, but in the moment, sometimes you have to take a risk. Sometimes you have to go with your gut and say, screw everyone else. If I live through this, then they can put me on trial. But my job is to make sure that my team members survive. So if I have to bend a rule or just flat out break a rule and start, you know, releasing ordnance from a B-1 bomber.
B-1 bomber, folks.
At 20,000 feet. Above the deck, then that's what I have to do, because that's the whole reason that I was assigned to the team, was to provide that link between the guys on the ground and the aircraft above.
Now, folks, they have B-1 bomber off on station, and what other aircraft did you have on station or that you could call?
Oh, I had everything. I controlled everything from Italian Mangustas, which are basically their version of a Apache attack helicopter. I've even controlled a Spanish drone, but a lot of the aircraft that I worked up there were B-1 bombers, and the reason because of that was because we were so far away from any type of runway or aviation support that if they sent fast movers to us, like F-16s, 18s, or anything like that, the fueling became an issue because they would basically have to drag a tanker with them and just bingo back and forth to the tanker to refuel after like 20 minutes. So with the bombers, you get a bomber on station. Your bomber's there for about 3 hours before he's got to go tank again. And I tell you what, there's nothing that'll make you sleep better at night, you know, when you're out of the fire base than hearing that soft hum of a bomber circling over above.
And you on the ground getting ready to call it in, is that right?
Absolutely.
And what was your confidence level at that time for you to get it cool, right on, spot on? What was your level at that point?
I tell you what, I could see my abilities and my confidence kind of building as the deployment went on and as I dropped more ordnance and more ordnance. And, you know, my counterpart, who did fire support for the 82nd Airborne, who worked in their command center on the FOB, Danny, we were inseparable. We communicated all the time over the radio, and it almost became like a beautifully choreographed dance when it came to executing the release of ordnance. And, I mean, we were precise. We would remove a building that was sitting in between two buildings. And it was amazing. Amazing.
Would you do that with a J-dam?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you would. That was mostly what we would do, especially with the B-1 bomber, because I had the ability, we have the ability to use the sensors, so a B-1 bomber has a camera, and I can tap into that feed, and I can view his camera feed on the ground. Now, that's great when you don't have cloud cover, but when you have cloud cover, the aircraft can't see the ground. So it's basically on the my responsibility on the ground to generate that 10-digit grid that is accurate up to 3 meters. And I need to pass that to the aircraft, and they're going to do everything I tell them to do. They're going to drop it, plus or minus 3 meters on that grid. So that grid has to be perfect. There is no room for failure when you're doing that.
Now think of this, folks. This is Michael, and he's on the ground, and he has eyes right there in front of him on his laptop, right? Right?
That's right.
Yeah, or whatever.
Watching the video feed.
Watching the video feed that the bomber, and he can watch that being guided in, and there you are, what, 100 meters away or whatever from the...
Oh, we've had some real close ones. We had dropped we dropped two 2,000-pound bombs simultaneously on a command and control node. And it was to the point where we had some guys, I actually had to tell the guys, you got to bound back at least 50 meters into this compound and find a nice thick wall to get behind, because these things are going to come in, they're going to be less than 100 meters from you, and they're probably going to blow your eardrums.
And that's a ton of explosives, folks, 2,000 pounds. That's a ton of explosives. Two of them coming down, you got this great concussion. And I know there must have been a feeling when you hit it, man, spot on, you made the basket, you were right there. What did you feel?
You actually, leading up to that point, because you do the math right, you did your target location, you did everything you could to get the perfect grid, and then you sent up the 9 line to the aircraft, and, they're outbound, they're getting ready to turn around and come back in to make their run. And there's always that gut kind of feeling that, you start double checking your numbers again. You're like, okay, was it right? Could I have made it better? And it gets to the point where you just have to believe in yourself. You just have to have confidence in your ability to do it. You know you went through the steps. You did everything right. And then here comes the aircraft inbound, and he's calling to you, and then you have to clear him hot. And you can actually hear the bomb. You can actually hear a JDAM falling through the cloud.
What's it sound like?
A freight train coming.
What's it? Oh, I mean, it's projecting sound. I had it. Correct?
Yeah, you can hear it, especially if it's if the air density is very high. You can hear it, ripping through the air, and it impacts as soon as it slams its target. The guys around you will be hooting and hollering because you just knocked out an entire, especially if it's 2,000-pound bomb, you just knocked out an entire, group of fighters. And you're really, because once you start, the Taliban will go toe-to-toe. They'll go toe-to-toe with small arms and heavy guns and stuff. But it's not until you start kicking bombs off the rails that they realize that you are not playing around anymore.
Yes, and you were using other little ways to spook, let's say, the Taliban, without dropping bombs. You were using, is that it? And until we go to our final break, I'm getting a signal. No. Okay. I got 3 minutes, right? 3 minutes. Got it. All right. Well, doggone it. There's so much here to cover. Okay. You wrote the book. I know. I got to go back to the book because you wrote the book. Was it cathartic for you?
It was. I never intended to write the book. I kept a memoir and took some pretty good notes in country, not meaning to do anything with them. And about halfway through the deployment, I started realizing that this was something that was very unique that was going on. And by the time we got to the end of deployment, it had just been such an amazing experience that I told the team guys, I'm like, hey, if I can, if You know, if it's possible, if all the stars align, I would like to turn this into a book. Because, you know, like I said, at this point, there hasn't been a book about Marine Corps Special Operations. And at some point, somebody's going to write the first book. It's going to happen. So why not us? Why not this story?
This can
be the first page of Marine Special Operations history.
Now, we have less than 2 minutes. Can you believe that? Wow, things go by very quickly. Tell my listeners why they need to have your book, why they can have your book, all about your book. Tell my listeners. Say it directly to them, Michael.
You are absolutely going to love this book because the style that it's written in, it brings up a lot of questions about ROEs, about fighting the war, why we're there, what did we leave with? And I did my best not to draw any conclusions. I wrote it as honest as I could. You know, I had a lot of people that were in the valley to help me verify facts and to make this presentation of the story as accurate as possible from many different perspectives. And it allows the reader, when they get to the end, first, they're going to have to grab their breath when they get to the end, because literally when you start reading the book, it will pull you all the way through.
Absolutely.
And not want you to put it down.
Absolutely.
But when you get to the end, you know, you maybe have some questions, but if you think back in the story, a lot of them were answered, and I left it open for the reader to make their own conclusions, because I thought that was the best way and most effective way for people to really appreciate it and to kind of take something away from it. Now they have a better understanding of the overall war in Afghanistan. They have a better understanding of what it was like on the ground for these guys and how was it to fight in these multinational type of militaries and against an embedded and entrenched enemy like the Taliban was up in that area.
Okay. Michael, we have to go. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. And we'll be right back. Michael Golombeski, thank you. We'll be right back after all of this information.
Schoolcraft College is proud to have served the communities of Southeast Michigan for 5 decades. So it should come as no surprise that they're just as committed to serving those who have served our country. Schoolcraft College Veteran Services provides assistance to veterans using their educational benefits. They help with the VA benefits application process, provide academic advising, and plan programs of study according to VA guidelines. Classes are forming now in Livonia and Garden City. Visit schoolcraft.edu for more information.
Yacht Sales, the East Coast's finest dealer of Chris Craft, Island Packet Yachts, Packet Craft, Parker Fishing Boats, and Nautic Star Boats. Schrader Yachts is located at the top of Barnicot Bay in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Our good friend Ray Schrader provides you, the customer, with over 30 years' experience in boat sales, sail and power boats, both new and used. Schrader Yacht Sales offers a full-service storage facility and a reliable crew responsible for all of your boating needs. Specialists in electronics, they can accommodate your needs for radar, autopilot, air conditioning, GPS, heat, and communications. Give Ray a call at 732-899-8010. That's 732-899-8010, or go to SchraderYachts.com. That's SchraderYachts.com. Oh, by the way, tell Ray you heard about him on Veterans Radio, and he will personally deliver your new boat from Schrader Yachts anywhere there's water. Schrader Yachts, ready to serve all of your boating needs.
And that his son, Kevin, is the one to call at that number. So if you need to get a boat, Kevin will be the one that will deliver it to you. Bob and I were thinking about and talking about Ray just a little bit ago. And Ray was my best friend, of course, from years and years ago. And I'll mention a little bit more about him in a minute. But he was an early supporter of Veterans Radio. He helped us out financially to get on the air and to stay on the air. And so we were running his ad, and I talked with him briefly a couple of weeks ago before he passed away, and he just said to Dale and Bob, keep talking. So if I've got – how much time have I got? I'm trying to read the clocks here myself.
This is it.
Okay.
Go ahead. Read it.
All right. It is with a heavy heart that I say goodbye to my best friend, Ray Schrader, a real-life Jersey boy. Ray was my bunkmate in flight school and lifelong friend. Ray passed away Tuesday on the 19th of August this year at the age of 68, much too young. Ray was an early member of the Veterans Radio family. from the very first time I told him about Veterans Radio, his comment was, what a great idea. Do it. What can I do to help? Every day with Ray was an adventure. I've never known anyone who loved life more and lived it to its fullest day. He was one of those people who was always truly happy to see you and could always put a smile on your face. He will be missed by family and friends alike, a true George Bailey kind of man who lived a wonderful life. The slogan of Army Aviation is above the best. Well, Ray, they don't come any better than you. Godspeed on your next adventure.
Clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more. I never knew, and I think to myself,